Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is a wonderful man I had the good fortune to meet a couple of months ago. And he's an artist who lives in San Francisco. And in talking actually to his wife, Toby Clayman, I discovered that Joe has a really interesting and important family history. Now, I know a lot of people do, and a lot of people have this family history. But Joe's the one who's here and can tell us about it. Can I just turn to you and talk and just ask you to start in and tell us about this family history? Because I'm gathering that it was your great-grandfather,
yes,
who was a slave in America and was a very heroic person.
Yes.
Can you just talk about that?
Well, my great-grandfather was a slave in Virginia.
Do you know how he got there, or how his family got there?
Yeah, they came over. He was a slave. He came over in Africa, from Africa.
I didn't know if you knew what country or what.
He came. I can't think of the country offhand,
okay,
but I do know it's. You had it written down before. I'll have to get back.
That's
to you.
That's okay. No,
I'll
you
get
don't.
Back to you on that. But to tell you the story about my uncle, he escaped from a plantation,
mm-hmm,
and he made so many trips to Canada.
Mm-hmm. Well, can I ask you, I don't know if you know this, but he escaped to where? And do you know how he did that?
Yeah, on the Underground Railroad.
Uh-huh. So he had help getting out.
Yeah, he got out. He escaped from the Underground Railroad, and he went to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And he made a lot of trips to Canada. He shot his way out from Canada. I mean, from the United States, and he went up to Canada.
Shot his way out.
Oh yeah, the posses went after him.
Oh my goodness! And yeah. was he solo? He was just running by himself?
No, he had help from some of the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the Blackfoot Indians, I'm pretty sure, helped him.
Mm-hmm.
And he went through New Jersey up to Oswego, and then went up to Canada.
I have a technical question about the laws at the time. So the posse from Virginia was after him.
Yeah,
but how far did they think they were entitled to chase him?
Oh, they chased him all the way up.
Really?
And then they chased him to the border of Canada, and some parts of Canada he got in. But what he did, when he got to Canada, he made 19 trips back to free all the slaves that were at this plantation.
He went back to Virginia.
Yeah, and rescued more slaves. They sent a posse after him up into New Jersey,
mm-hmm,
up into Canada. So that's the underground. Can I make a stop here?
Well, but do you know more about him? I mean, how old was he then? Do you have any idea?
He was in his 30s.
So he was young enough to be strong enough to do that.
Yeah.
And did he, obviously he married and had children. Do you know anything about
him? I think he was married 3 times,
mm-hmm,
or something like that. And he had many children. And but keep going to Canada. We have relatives in Canada.
Uh-huh.
My sister, she did some rehearsals. My niece, actually, my niece in New York, Yonkers,
mm-hmm,
she did some research and found out that we had family in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife and I, we went to Canada.
And met them.
And we met some of them. And surprised, they were all professional people.
Now, why do you say surprised, though?
I mean, because, I didn't realize, just knowing the history of the United States, you know,
mm-hmm,
people didn't have a chance. But Canada...
Oh, at the same time in the United States where people didn't have a chance to do that, they did in Canada.
In Canada. Canada was more progressive.
I see.
And
what were they?
They were... Some of them was professor.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was... Actually, one of them was an art professor.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was a doctor. But they were all... they all look like branch combs.
That's not surprising.
I was shocked. to see that they were all, you know, had the same characteristics. And they told me part of their family history, too, you know, that they had.
Oh, so what did they tell you?
That the same thing, that my great-grandfather, some of them stayed in Canada. They wouldn't go back to the United States.
Sure.
Because, you know, after.
Why would they?
So, and this is on that part of the family. And it was like, you know, it's, my history is like, this is on my mother's side.
This great-great-grandfather was on your mother's side.
Yeah, my mother's side.
Now, were they surprised to meet you and see that you looked like a branch cone?
Well, actually, one of my half-sisters came to California.
To live or to visit?
No, to visit.
Oh, yes.
And since we've been to Canada, to tell us about, you know, their family and stuff.
That must be an amazing experience for a family, for descendants to come together again.
Yeah.
Having had this history, horrible history, difficult.
You know, it's like on my, I just saw my grandmother's side. You know, and then my father's side was a different altogether.
What was
this
that?
Was like my father, he came from a very wealthy grandfather.
Is that right?
The branch cones, they came over here too, from Africa,
as slaves.
As slaves, and then they landed in Virginia, and they went back east, and New Jersey, and settled in Virginia, in Virginia, and then when they after the. They got their, this one state, I think Virginia was a free state for African-Americans to go in. So my great...
After the Civil War.
After the Civil War. So my father's people, my great-grandfather, my father's side, was educated, and he educated my...
Now, I'm interested in where was he educated, and at what point does that break come where you get to start and make your own life and be master of your own fate somehow? I mean, you escape slavery and you go to New York and do what?
My great-grandfather opened a business, Branch Coleman Son Movers, and it was not enough, you know, this was the time the blacks were getting into businesses and they were moving. And they were being considered a middle class before the Italians and part of the Irish.
So what year was this? So he was a mover, so they had trucks.
Yeah,
and
this was in the 30s.
Oh, that's late.
Before the war. Yeah, it was in the early 20s, actually, late 20s. Mm-hmm. My grandfather, late 20s. I'm just saying the 30s because I was born in 30. But it was in the early, in the 20s. So my great grandfather, my father's father, he started a business, Branch Coleman Son Movers, and he sent my aunt and my father to college. They both had college degrees. My dad, so they were very successful. My dad married my mom, and she was the most beautiful girl in New Jersey, and he married her. But she had a defect hearing problem. She couldn't hear, took it in one ear or something, and she was kind of slow to a certain degree.
Oh, just because she couldn't hear the information.
But she was my buddy. She kind of like. Well, I'll get to that in a minute, but to go back to my dad, he hired everybody, and his business was so big, it was before UPS and Federal Express.
Oh, so he didn't just move people, he moved furniture to homes.
He had a beauty shop in New Jersey to sell cosmetics. To black businesses, and he would go over and get packages and live them all over the city.
I mean, I don't know why I'm laughing. I'm so charmed by all this.
But the mafia stopped him. He says, oh, no, no, no. You cannot...
Out of which?
Out of New York. You cannot move. That's...
Ooh.
We're taking over that business.
Oh, my goodness. Actually went up to him and said that in his face.
Oh, he had. I mean, it killed him.
So what did...
He just stopped.
Oh, he did.
I mean, you know, he just said it was just the movers. He'd move rich people. I mean, people on Fifth Avenue, you know, like the Rockefellers, very rich. His clientele, because he had movers that knew how to pack, you know, these big wooden barrels full of straw with china and stuff like that. So they helped him. You know, they kept him in business because he knew how to take care of business. And because my father, he had such a great war history. They didn't tell, they didn't do this. I mentioned blacks in the First World War. My dad said he was an engineer at school and they made him take care of horses. When he was in France, he said, you take care of the horses. You're black. You're only going to take care of the stables. And, you know, my father was a patriot. He says, some officer's truck broke down and the driver didn't know what to do. My father fixed that truck, as Jeep or whatever it was, and the officer says, you're my driver. From now on, you don't do nothing. You answer to me.
And that was a promotion from taking care of the horses?
But my father had a camera. And he did all the photographs.
Mm-hmm.
He shot all these. We got the photo. Anyway, we got all these photographs. And this, my father had to go to Canada.
Why?
To join the army. And the United States took him over after he got over there. The United States says, "Okay, we're taking you, and you're going to take care of horses." But he was in the army in Canada because he wanted to fight.
Yes,
we had relatives through
the
Underground Railroad. We had relatives in Canada.
Right.
So he figured, well, he's going to go to Canada to help fight in the war. And before the Americans got in, he was in it. And then they grabbed him.
I see. Oh,
so they grabbed him. And this was...
So even with that whole history, he felt that patriotic and love for America that he wanted to...
Yeah. Uh-huh. It was in his DNA.
Yes.
But,
Well, certainly heroism is in everybody's...
So, you know, that's like my family, like my grandfather, he was such a good businessman. We had a place in Saratoga Springs. No blacks could go up there and use the...
Oh, like water fountains.
No,
like
it's
what?
The
toilets.
The springs, hot springs.
Oh, I see.
You know, Saratoga, when
they got these
health springs, the water comes out of the ground, minerals.
Right. That's where the racetrack is, right?
Yes. Uh-huh. So anybody could go up there, but there was no place for blacks. So my dad...
That is so insane.
So my aunt, she built a place for professional black people. Doctors, lawyers... And in the 20s and 30s.
And that was okay with the people of Saratoga?
She built a house up there.
Mm-hmm.
And then years later, she put water in there, you know, because it was all pumped. Mm-hmm. So she built a house for professional black people because, you know, to have a place to go.
Yes, of course.
And so they had money.
So what became of your father in the business after the mafia?
Well, he kept her in the business for years, and he slowed down. And then,
but he didn't just leave. You said he left New York?
No, he stayed in New York.
Mm-hmm.
He stayed in the Bronx, actually. But he
So he was able to be a mover and do his business in the Bronx?
Yeah, he did. He had clients, still had clients on Park Avenue.
Uh-huh.
He just couldn't do postal.
Oh, it was that part of it.
He couldn't do the... He had Italians working for him.
Yeah, so once he got into the cosmetic business and delivering, they didn't want him to do that kind.
No, they didn't want him to deliver, you know, like UPS. They said, that's out. You can't do that. But he had Italians working for him. Big, strong guys. You know, we lived in an Italian neighborhood.
What was that like? Do you remember that? You must.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Well, the thing was this. As a child, I had rheumatic fever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a hospital for a year.
Oh.
I had no schooling. that these nuns, you know, I'm not Catholic, but they put me in a Catholic
hospital.
All these nuns and stuff. And they wouldn't let me read a book or nothing. They had the kids, and you know, you had to take baths. You know, they put you, you know, for your rheumatic fever, to keep it from spreading or get worse, because it was so bad, people were dying from rheumatic fever. So they wanted to make sure I rested for a year. I couldn't stand that, but I was in there, and I thought these people were crazy for doing it. I had a brain,
yes,
but it was like
put on hold.
Put on hold.
How odd.
So when I got out, I moved back to the Bronx with my father and my brothers and sisters. And since my mom was kind of deaf in one ear, and all she did was have children.
Oh, so how many children? How many brothers and sisters?
There was quite a bit. There was about 10 of us.
Really? Was that, do you remember what that was like growing up?
Yes. I remember in 1937 when we went to the World's Fair. My dad took me and two other brothers, and I was five. 1939. I was five years old, and I remember telling some woman said, "Oh, those are the kids who were crying." I said, "Look, me and my brother was not crying." See, but I was outspoken at that age.
Good.
That that I wasn't going to let somebody say my brother and I.
Good. You
know.
Yes.
So it was like, eventually my dad, he decided he had a mistress, Irish.
And did you know that at the time, or you knew this later?
I figured it out in 49 or 47, because when he had a friend up in the country, and we'd go there, and he'd take us in his little Ford. Back or whatever it was, a Ford. And this woman was, we go up to this place, and this woman, I remember her house, you know, it's just, she loves, you know, strawberries.
Strawberries? Oh, she was growing, yeah. Oh, you know, oh, the wallpaper.
Wallpaper, flowers, but she had a garden too, fresh vegetables. That's where I got my fingers, the garden. She had a garden. And I would go there, so I knew who she was. You know, over the years I met her. But my brother, older brothers and sisters knew about it. And then I found out about it. I was mad.
But your mother was home during
these
years.
Yeah, she was having
And your baby. Mother your mother never knew about it.
She found out later, but it didn't matter. She had it gave her a break, actually. I think, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, when you come from a large family, and you're brought up in a time when right after the First World War, and then not too long, you have another war, you know, bouncing around, you know, in Europe. You find out that things change, and you can see, I can see the changes in the neighborhood where people would move out to the avenues. I mean, you know, and like San Francisco, but like in New York, people would go out to Long Island. See, everybody was stuck in
the suburbs.
Irish and the Italians were stuck in a neighborhood.
Yeah.
Certain parts of New York, down at the waterfront to the Italians, and up in the Bronx were the Irish. And when they started getting a little better treatment, they would move out to the suburbs. So,
sure.
You know, when the World's Fair was in 1939, I could see the cities, how everybody was moving out, you know, to the avenues.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
And stuff like that. So I can see all this.
Well, now, how did you come to San Francisco then? And also, I'm just curious, are you still in touch with your brothers and sisters and the Canadian family? And
well, not the Canadian. We just saw on the computer.
Well, that's in touch,
came,
for sure.
They came out to visit us.
And your brothers and sisters?
My sister in Oakland, and I have another brother older than I. He's a snob. I see him once in a while. I mean, you know, there's black snobs like any other. You see, people think
everything lives everywhere.
They think that, you know, certain nationality is just snobbish. But every nationality,
sure, of course.
And if you just read the paper, why is this guy from Africa killing his own? You know, you see, that's the way I look
awful
at life.
Yeah.
So I Let me tell you another thing about New York City as a child. I lived with my grandmother on 66th Street after I came out of the hospital with my rheumatic fever because I was a problem. I couldn't get along. I felt that I was deprived of my education. So I lived in 66th Street in a brownstone between Columbus and Central Park. Now, these three brownstones were all black families, and all of them professional, doctors, lawyers, and right on this little cluster between Central Park and Columbus, and then there's a St. Nicholas Arena on the corner. Across the street, diagonal, was a horse stable for all the rich children to ride. So I lived with my grandmother, and right around the corner, on 8th Avenue, there was this guy and his son I used to hang out with. It was about my age. And this guy was always telling me about how bad... he introduced me to somebody, to a private school. He says, you got to go to the school.
You got to what?
A private art school. And right up in New York City. And when I go to the school, this teacher was always telling me what they did to the blacks. I said, I know my black history, but I got good, I got some good lessons for them. I got how to do contour drawing. I had to know how to use my mind without looking at the paper. So I did get a good lessons from him. But I couldn't stand the idea. He was telling me about my history.
Now, and he was a white person?
Yeah. Grothby. He was a white person. He just died a year ago. But let me tell you about it. He wanted me to go to Russia.
Why?
With three other guys. A writer and a singer, a folk singer.
Yeah.
All three of us were going to this class. And he says, you should go to Russia. I said, why? I mean, I'm in the United States. I mean, my father.
Oh, he wanted you to move to Russia?
Yeah.
Oh, not just to visit.
No, he says they'll treat you better. The two guys that went to Russia, they can't come back.
Oh, my goodness.
Even after the...
Yeah. Oh,
because they gave up
so interesting.
They gave up their citizenship. But this, I didn't find out two years later, maybe 2 years ago, that this same guy, Robert Rothme or something, he worked for the government.
For the United States government?
He got a military honor. He was planned to get educated black children to become communists.
Oh, he worked for their government?
Our government.
But why would he work for our government? And
because what they wanted to do, they wanted to get all the cream. The black people that could think for themselves.
Right.
Independent thinkers.
Yes.
Like these three guys were good thinkers.
No, but why would somebody from our government want to get turn people in favor of communism and then move to Russia?
He didn't move to Russia. He wanted them to.
But why?
So they couldn't come back.
Oh, my goodness.
He worked.
That is so convoluted.
But the government gave him a reward.
No wonder I'm not catching on.
The government, our government, this is what our government does. They have people in neighborhoods that say, hey, you know, this is just bad, bad, bad. But they're not working for me. They're working for the government, you know. And that's what I found out. When they in the newspaper.
I'm going to go mute here.
No, but this
happens. This is so bizarre.
But it's true, because they did that in the 50s to all black. There's a book this guy wrote. What's his name? Somebody wrote about blacks in the 50s, how the government would train them.
Oh, I'm sure that our government did a lot of really awful things.
So this is one of them.
Yes.
My brother-in-law, he got it pretty good. Deal because he worked for the government. He helped somebody in the Philippines. When he was in the Philippines, he helped save somebody's life. So, you know.
Have you written all this down?
Well, we got notes. My
I know
wife
you've got,
has.
I know you've got notes, but there's more to this than notes. And then there's your personal opinion. Okay, I have a question about this. So, I'm about love letters, as you know.
Yes.
And I would say to you, if you were to write a love letter right now, who would get it? Do you ever think about what it would feel like or be like to write that letter to your great-great-grandfather, or even, well, to him, to catch him up on the glorious life that his family is living now?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like when we went to Canada to meet their relatives. A lot of them said we should do something.
Yes.
We started something, and I think I stopped it.
Well, what if you just sat down? I mean, you're an artist, and let's just talk about that for a minute, because
I could talk into a mic and, you know, tell like I'm talking to you now.
Yes.
And then I have to jump back and forth because there's so much.
There's so much. That's why I'm thinking that a series of letters where you just sit down for half an hour every night. I love giving homework. Yeah. And you just, what was his name, your great-great-grandfather?
Ron's, I got so many.
That's okay. You'll check it later because I have it written down here someplace too. And here's a whole book, The Underground Railroad.
Yeah.
And your family is in here.
Yeah.
I know that. By William Still.
Yeah.
So you could, and you just said, you know, you would just write a letter. Let's say one a week, and you would start from the earliest thing you remember.
Yeah.
And you could take your own detours and write down in your own handwriting.
Yeah.
This little piece of remembrance and that little piece, all as a way of saying thank you for what you did in releasing people from slavery and letting our brilliance and creativity and imagination run free so we could be the successes that we are.
Yeah.
Because I think that would be great.
Because I think everybody that's born, in certain circumstances, something happens. Like in my case, they threw me in a hospital.
Right.
I wasn't brainwashed because I was in a hospital for a year. So I wasn't brainwashed through the propaganda of the school system and everything else. So I was able, and then I like to read.
Mm-hmm.
See, once I got, I would read Nietzsche, the Russian writer. I liked him because, but I mean, not that he was a communist thinker, but it's the way he created it, the way he, you know, and you know, I read him. Everything about the war, the First World War.
But also your own memory. I mean, the part you told about this man wanting children to be educated and have a reason to leave the
country. Yeah.
I mean, who knows about this? Not so many people.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah.
So if you wrote this down, you know, none of us is here forever. Oh. And your children will find this someday, and maybe your grandchildren will find
it. Oh, it's just like when I...
Nieces and nephews.
Years ago when I got a job.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was a veteran,
mm-hmm.
I got a job. I got a job working at the shipyard, and I said, one day I went down there, and they clean the tanks out from this. And I said, wait a minute. I got up and I left. I said, what are you doing? Trying to kill me? And then I did my research. They were using black people for guinea pigs testing out new gases that they're going to use in the war.
So I'm delighted you're telling me about it.
I understand what you mean.
But write it down.
Because people don't know that, but this happened at the shipyard years ago.
This is an important part of everybody's history.
And
horrible, but
and all the pollution that they finally cleaned up.
If you felt like doing this, it would be just a wonderful love letters project.
Okay, I got to remember that. Do it that way.
Yes, and I know you're busy, and I know you're a wonderful artist because I see all your portraiture here, and people can go and Google Joseph Mack Branchcombe, Branchcomb, and you get to see his artwork, which is gorgeous, and so good. So you've got so much to give and offer, and you're still working.
Yeah,
and you've got art shows. Yes.
But I have another paper somewhere that I wrote something. If I can find it, it's
okay. Well, okay. So you make a good point here, Mr. Branchcombe. It's the "if I can find it" part.
Well, this is true.
So if you got yourself a nice big box, and you know a nice big some kind of box, stationery stores have beautiful storage boxes, and you could just write piece of notebook paper, and just write it down, dear great grandpa. I just wanted to let you know what's happened since you've been gone and what you allowed us to become.
Oh,
and then just keep writing down. Here's what happened when I then. Here's The next day, hi, I'm back for another letter.
Oh, that's good.
And here's what happened when they tried to make me clean the tanks.
Yeah.
And just write down your memories and your opinions. You're going to be leaving a fabulous history behind you.
Yeah.
You know, you take all this to the grave.
This is true.
And not such a help.
But it'd be good for my great-grandchildren. And it's not for that. It's, you know, like when I did a talk at the school across the street the other day of Black history, I was shocked they didn't have a map. I said, what kind of school is this? You got all these mixed children in this school, and you don't have a map, because I wanted to show them a South Africa when I went to South Africa.
Okay, so there's another chapter for you. Dear Great Grandpa, I just went and spoke at a school, and guess what? Every little bit, every little bit. And you say it'll be good for your great-grandchildren, but you're already smiling.
Yeah.
And so the truth of the matter is when we write these things, it's good for us because we get to bathe in our own positive and our own strength.
That's true,
I know you do that a lot because you've got so much of it, but just that moment of giving it expression.
Yeah, I see
okay.
what you mean.
I want to thank you for doing this with me. It's been such a pleasure getting to know you.
My, you know, your things spark when you're talking to me. Things come up that I forgot about.
Good.
You see?
Yes.
And this is
and
good.
You don't want them lost.
No.
No. All right. Oh, I'm so glad you'll do this.
I
hope to see it in the book someday.
Okay.
You know, why not? So until next time, this is Janet Allen saying goodbye.
Okay.
And please remember that if you ever think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, that every moment of your life is a special occasion and has the seed of some little memory that you could write a love letter to somebody. And you could mail it to yourself or your grandchildren.
Very good.
And when you see that envelope in the mail, it's going to just make your heart skip a beat.
Okay.
So until next time, thank you and goodbye.
Okay, goodbye.